91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today we visit with members of the Switchboard of Miami team and discuss suicide prevention and intervention. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. The Centers for Disease Control shows that one U.S. suicide occurs every 13 minutes. Nearly 80% of suicide shows some relationship with alcohol, antidepressants, and opiates. And though females are more likely to attempt suicide, males are four times more likely to induce death. Firearms are the most likely suicide form for males. Poisoning is more frequent among women. We'll hear from our Switchboard panel in minutes on Topical Currents after NPR and regional news.
And it is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman on this Tuesday afternoon. Well, this hour we discuss a topic which unfortunately is on the rise. It's suicide.
We'll discuss how to prevent it, how to affect an intervention. We have a panel from the nonprofit Switchboard of Miami with us in the studio.
Of course, suicide is but one of many crises handled on the Switchboard hotlines. With us is the manager of Switchboard's Suicide Prevention Department, Diana Flores. She's also a master trainer who's on board with Switchboard since 2007. Welcome to you, Diana Flores. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Also in the studio is longtime Crisis Line suicide counselor and many more things, Damian Laudicio. Among other qualifications, he's a certified question, persuade, and refer trainer. That's QPR by the American Association of Suicide. Thank you, Damian, for coming.
Thank you so much for having us here.
And we're very happy to have a 27-year veteran of Switchboard of Miami counseling. She's Trudy Kresovic. Again, among many other credentials, she's a founding member of the South Florida Suicide Prevention Coalition and also represents Switchboard in many community functions. Welcome to you, Trudy. It's
nice Thank to you for you. Having us here today.
Okay, it's very good to have you. I thought we'd begin with just a general overview of Switchboard and its history, and perhaps, Trudy, you've seen it for 27 years. Maybe you'd be a good one to answer
Great,
that.
Sure. My pleasure. Switchboard of Miami started in 1968, sort of hippie line, it used to be called. And it was founded, according to the story, by three students of Miami-Dade College. They thought the need of, helping other people, particularly young people, they were passing on drugs, etc. From that, we had evolved, probably they never thought what they were creating at the time. We had evolved. Today, we have become one of the most important agencies in the country. We are probably considered number three in the United States in terms of, importance because of the work that we do. And from one line, one phone, one room, we had evolved. We have, I think, 16 lines right now. We do also texting and chat, among other things. And last year, we had merged with Family Counseling Services, the oldest agency in the county. And combined, we have about 150 years experience helping the community.
How does the chat work?
I will let my colleague, Damian, respond to that.
We're part of the National Suicide Lifeline. And part of the National Suicide Lifeline, besides the 1-800 Suicide Line, and why Trudy mentioned we're third most important, is because in that network, we cover the United States and Canada as a backup center for calls. But then there are clients who don't want to call. So they go to the National Suicide Lifeline Network. Maybe they Google, suicide, and that comes up. And when they go to it, they realize they can click on a link and actually chat in with a counselor from their computer.
So this could be somebody in Utah or Wisconsin.
It could be somebody from anywhere in the world, technically, because when you chat into a computer.
Yeah.
And this texting, chatting, calling line is available 24/7.
Yes, and chat's a little different because chat is through the computer, but you can actually text in from your cell phones. Mm-hmm. And the texting line, which is part of the crisis text line that we answer, youth are really what it kind of reaches out to. How do you have a private conversation as a 14-year-old in your home, mm-hmm. if something is deeply painful? You can't pick up the phone and talk to somebody without your parents hearing you or somebody hearing you. So we found it's an amazing way to connect, especially with youth.
I was pretty shocked to read that in 2012, suicide was the third leading cause of death for 10 to 24-year-olds in Florida.
Well, right now, when you look at the age ranges from the 2013 statistics, which okay. I just was checking out, from the age 10 to 34, it's now the second leading cause of death.
10 to 34.
Yeah. So the rate actually went up, but the rates have been going up every year. Every year that the statistics has come out, you'll see that the rates have normally gone up.
So unfathomable that someone at the age of 10 years old would be in such pain that they would be considering taking their own life.
What are the experts... And what is your experience? What's being attributed to this dramatic rise in suicide?
I would say usually it's a combination of factors. It's not usually one thing.
Right. What are they?
Well, you can have people with low coping skills. They've never been taught from, you know, infants, let's say. Add just life tribulations that come unexpectedly, death. You know, mental health, substance abuse, loss of job, anything, and put a lot together.
But why would it be on the rise like that? There's always been loss. There's always been loss of jobs. There's always been loss of loved ones. There's always been drug abuse. Are those things on the rise as well, Damien?
Yes. Oh, those things are also
on the rise. Is bullying
on
the rise too?
Yes.
Well, bullying.
Even for example, when you look at the Dade County Public School System, part of our coalition that Trudy is the vice chair for, the South Florida Coalition for Suicide, the crisis team from Miami-Dade County Public Schools is on it. And one of the things that they've dealt with in their school system is that there's been a great rise in self-harm. And so there seems to be a lot of contagion factor on, you know, when you're talking about alcohol, drugs, peer pressure, things going on around you. And it just seems, I remember when I went to high school, the peer pressure I had on me just doesn't seem the same as it is now. Because I could go home and have some peace and quiet. But as a youth...
Social media. Mm-hmm.
You go home and you just, it follows you home. And in very heinous statements on your Facebook page, on your social media. And so in many ways we're interconnected, you know.
Which is a good thing and a bad thing.
Exactly. But,
you know, you mentioned this contagious aspect, and I was interested when I was reading the literature, you said that sometimes individuals contemplating suicide already are spurred on by the a successful suicide of another person. How often do you see that where, like, if there is a suicide that some more people are going to try it?
You could look at it in this terms. If we were all in a high school together and John had killed himself, had completed his suicide, and this great tragedy had happened to us, we would be deeply affected by it. However, what you have to understand is before John died by suicide, there was somebody else in that school, probably many other people who thought about it. Everybody in that school now is talking about John. And they may be talking about how angry they are with John, how disappointed. They may be talking about how disappointed that they weren't able to help John. But that person who's thinking about suicide, who's still there, nobody's talking about them. So we find part of the contagion factor is those who are already thinking about it can become further isolated, especially if it's in their immediate environment.
Do they tend to also copycat methods?
It's normal when you find somebody has lost somebody to suicide to choose the same method. The greatest way we learn is by example.
What are the greatest risk groups at risk other than young people? Would it be the elderly, veterans? Who are the greatest risk groups?
Well, if you're talking about, depending on how you want to look at it, the greatest risk group for completion of suicides is middle-aged white male, Caucasian male by firearm. Okay. And so that obviously oftentimes encompasses veterans.
Right.
But understand this, it can get a little sticky. And when I've done trainings and talk about our loss to veterans to suicide by firearms, I've had people in the audience become offended because they would think, well, you're wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. Because in their personal experience, they've served in the military and they lost people who are veterans, but they didn't use firearms. They used some other method. So just because somebody's trained in a firearm,
right,
doesn't mean they'll use it. Now, as far as other risk groups, if you're talking about who's the highest risk for suicide attempts, because, you know, it's estimated about 1 million people a year are making an attempt in the U.S. Out of that 1 million people, we end up on average with 360,000 in the hospital. And that's documented because they're in the hospital.
Right.
And then out of that, in 2013, we lost 41,149. So from attempting to completion, it's not so simple.
What group were you going to say was the most...
But when we're talking about groups, we're talking about those who are transgendered. The statistics have come back. Studies have come back as high as 37% will make a suicide attempt. So that doesn't reflect those who complete from that group, but it's one of the highest risk groups for suicide attempts as that group. Veterans, when we talk about them, they have the highest rates for completion, not attempts. And the same with elderly. When elderly make suicide attempts, they have a higher completion rate.
And
they
what about do. Terminally ill?
I'm not aware of, I know in elderly that they've said that they have the highest completion rate, but with terminally ill, I've not seen anything in terms of studies done on that. But sometimes people might think, oh, that equals suicide, somebody's terminally ill, they want to die. But in my personal experience, I've known people who would not let go, no matter what pain and suffering right. they were going through. They absolutely just never thought about it. They just wanted to live.
We're speaking with members of the team at Switchboard of Miami on today's Topical Currents. A short break, and we'll be right back.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Our topic today is suicide, suicide prevention, and also suicide intervention. We're here with a team from Switchboard of Miami. They are definitely in the trenches on this issue. But this is the manager of Switchboard Suicide Prevention Department, Diana Flores. Also the Crisis Line Suicide Counselor, Damian Laudicio. And also, of course, Trudy Kresovic. Tell me, what's the best... Who do you hear from often? Do you often hear from relatives or loved ones of people who think that their child or their loved one is contemplating things? Do they call for advice also?
I would say we hear a little bit of everything. We have what we call third-party callers, so a friend in regards to a friend or a family
right.
member. We get the person directly. We get the school counselor, the psychologist. A little bit of everything, and that's probably the good aspect of Switchboard, that we get the general population. We're not limited to one specific population.
Would you say that people that reach out have a lesser chance of completing a suicide than those that just don't talk about it or come to you?
That's a very hard question, because that is...
It's hard to know.
It's hard to know. Unfortunately, with suicide, there is no definite profile. There's warning signs, there's triggers, etc.
What are the warning signs and the triggers? Let's talk about those.
Okay. Well, it encompasses a lot. There's an endless list.
Okay.
But of course, one of the big factors is mental health. That's a very big topic. Bullying. We have substance abuse.
Well, one of the things that you want to pay attention to if you're a family member or friend is a change in the behavior.
Mm-hmm. More sullen?
It doesn't have, that's the thing though. There are people, for example, who may have been the black sheep in their family because they didn't embrace their family's religion. And then one day, one weekend, or one Sunday, they go to church with their family and they give themselves to God. And then then they're completing their suicide the next week. So it's like a change in a behavior that could seem positive and be hopeful for family members, but it's dramatic. You know, it's not normal.
So you're talking about a dramatic change when you see a dramatic change in behavior.
Well, for example, I could be stressed out every day and you be my colleague and working with me and you see me stressed out. And one day I come to work and I don't seem so stressed out. I actually seem calm. And you're like, oh, okay, that looks good. But sometimes people, when they decide to end their lives, they can have a sense of calm.
They've resolved the issues, I guess.
They feel it's resolving the issues because suicide's just a tragedy. It's never a solution. It's always just a tragedy.
What, okay, and triggers, I guess we've talked about, bullying, the loss of a job, the loss of a loved one, the loss of a partner.
Just understand triggers really come down to the individual.
Absolutely.
And their perception on the event. So what may seem inconsequential to me may be this horrible event for them. Really, in the end, what I would say is it comes down to the person's relationship with themselves, because that is usually the relationship that is going to fuel that suicide attempt above everything else.
If you have a question for the team from Switchboard of Miami, if you volunteer for Switchboard of Miami, if you have, or if you've had interaction with them, perhaps you've availed yourself of their services, you can call us 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576, or you can email radio@wlrn.org. What training do your volunteers receive that answer those texts and those chats and those phones?
It's a series of phases, if you will. And so we use that training opportunity to what we call the interview. And so we give them online training. They also complete training where they have to come in physically and we challenge them. We put them in situations purposely. We act a certain way purposely to see reactions, see how they can, you know, handle it on the spot. And then we have what's called practicum, where once they finish that physical training, they can go into whatever platform and then they actually do a practicum with supervision. And then once they finish at that point and they talk to actual clients, they get the approval of, okay, they're good to go on their own at this point.
What should a non-professional, we're talking about some of the signs, so let's say we pick up on it. And so what is a non-professional supposed to do?
If you're a non-professional and you're concerned about a family member or a friend, I would say to call a helpline and talk to somebody before you talk to your family or friend, because you can make things sometimes a little worse by saying possibly the wrong thing. Really, if you suspect somebody is thinking about suicide, the best thing to do is just ask directly.
How can Baker Act play into this?
I would hope that it doesn't have to. The Baker Act, which is an involuntary commitment that we would place somebody under into a crisis hospital. And basically, it's a forcible. Usually, police officers have to enforce it. Switchboard only uses that as if we feel somebody's in imminent danger. So they would be hospitalized for stabilization and evaluation. But if they're not in imminent danger, if somebody's just talking
about
suicide.
That's with a judge's knowledge, also correct.
Hmm? A judge, police officer, or a licensed psychologist or social work can write a Baker Act order. So,
do you think suicide still has, do you think enough is being done in the U.S.? Do you think suicide still has a stigma attached to it that might exacerbate the problem?
What happens in countries like United States, where multi-ethnic background, you know, plays a big role, it's a little difficult sometimes to say, okay, is this enough? Because you have an influx of people coming from countries like Latin America, where any type of mental illness is being perceived as something, even as a sin, as a shame,
right,
you know?
Right.
So it's a little difficult even for us as counselors sometimes to get the message across. I think the most important thing, one of the most important aspects of doing something is, like, for example, what WLRN is doing today, is getting the word out. Because suicide, you know, sometimes is something that we all know. If you were in a room with 10 people and you asked the question, probably 2-3 people, they had had a connection with suicide through a friend or something that happened. But we don't talk about that. Maybe because we are afraid of our own mortality, different things. And also the way the culturally suicide is perceived.
Which is different from other cultures. In some cultures, it's actually heroic, correct?
Yeah.
Or an honorable thing to do.
Yeah.
But then you have to be careful because not everybody who belongs to that culture thinks it's honorable. You have two people from the same culture and they
you
take
like
it
the
completely
samurai
different.
Business.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Japanese,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. You can also get in by email, that's radio@WLRN.org, radio@WLRN.org.
How often does drug addiction or alcohol addiction play a part in this? Is that often as prevalent as mental illness or part of it?
So mental illness as a factor, they've done studies on completed suicides, and 90% of those who die by suicides usually are suffering with a mental health concern or have
as depression or mm-hmm. okay,
or have a substance abuse disorder.
90%
of those who die, not those who are attempting. So you'd almost say mental health might be the factor that clouds our mind enough to overcome our instinct for survival. But when we talk about suicide and identifying it, because you asked earlier, how do you identify it? You can only identify by asking if you suspect it of the person, but we have what we call higher risk groups. So those who, groups that are more prone to depression, so you're talking about alcoholism, people who are being bullied, anybody in a life circumstance that will have a higher rate of suicide. But it doesn't mean that alcoholism or bullying equals suicide.
Right, right. Well, it depends, obviously, on the person. Joe, did you want to take that?
Well, can there be anything, perhaps there's no such thing, but such as a typical call that you can maybe run us through of how someone begins? Or is it just, I suppose everything is just completely different, but is anything that makes you hone in of saying, this is really serious here? An emotional state,
Not an emotional state, but what would raise my mind that it might be really serious is if you get on the call and the person sounds deeply affected. And I don't mean emotional, but we have callers who've called who've already done something. They've already taken pills. And you can hear the effect on them.
What do you do in that case?
In a case where somebody has taken pills or I suspect it, I would just address it. I'd be like, you don't sound okay. Have you taken anything? You know, just to establish.
And then
what was going on.
Would you call 911?
If somebody was making an attempt, I would turn to my colleague and let my colleague know that I had somebody on the phone making an attempt. But my colleague would handle that. My focus is the client. If I'm on the phone with the client, that's all I'm concerned about. Everything else that might happen around me has nothing to do with me. It's just me and that client. So you asked in terms of taking you through a situation with the client.
Yeah.
So the main thing is I can give you the perspective of the counselor. As the counselor, what we're there to do is that this client, no matter where they're coming from, has a story. And normally what most people have not been allowed to share is their story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there might be family around them who love them, but as when they start to share their story of pain, family members might say, no, it'll be okay. They might start to shut them down. And I won't say, you know, no, it's going to be okay. I'll say things like, I'm concerned. Tell me what's been happening. Tell me your story, share your pain with me, whatever that is. And I just let the person start to vent. And I don't judge anything they say, even if they say something that I know to be wrong.
Right. Does the fact that they've taken the time to call Switchboard indicate at least that they're still open to being talked down?
Mm-hmm. So that goes back to the question that she had asked earlier about, does that mean people reaching out for help,
right,
giving those warning signs, don't really want to die by suicide? So they've done many interviews with people who survived suicide attempts, very lethal attempts, that it's amazing that they lived. And when you talk to these people, they'll tell you they had reached out for help. They had let people around them know what was going on. I've talked to people who've lost loved ones to suicide. And most times they'll say they noticed something different, but they were afraid to address it, or they didn't know how to deal with it.
They didn't know how to address it.
Yeah.
We're speaking about suicide and the prevention thereof with a team from the Switchboard of Miami, Damian Laudicio, Diana Flores, and Trudy Krasovic. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back and take your calls, so stay with us. And it's Topical Currents for Tuesday. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're speaking with Diana Flores, the manager of the Suicide Prevention Department and master trainer at Switchboard of Miami, Damian Laudicio, coordinator in the Switchboard Suicide Prevention Department, and Trudy Krasovic is a substance abuse specialist and crisis counselor. If you'd like to join in the conversation, if you've had dealings with Switchboard, if you've availed yourself of their services, or you're thinking about it, or perhaps you're thinking of volunteering, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576, email wlrn.org, or if you are struggling yourself or
perhaps
know somebody
called,
who is.
You called hotline before.
Right. We'd love to hear from you. What is the South Florida Suicide Coalition, Trudy?
The South Florida Suicide Prevention Coalition was actually something that we started because we saw the need of doing something. There are several coalitions around the country and also in North Florida. So we got together, Diana, Damian, and myself. We talked. What can we do? Because we all have experience working on the phones. And we feel that it's important that the whole community gets involved and that everybody here can be a counselor, a crisis counselor at one moment, you know. So we created with Miami-Dade College and other organizations and agencies like Dade County Public School, we formed the Suicide Prevention Coalition with the aim of getting a campaign like we are thinking about a 3-year campaign that will involve the whole community, from the business, you know, students, and even lay people per se, but that everybody can contribute in its own way, but through trainings, through talks, presentations, and also our goal is, like we were talking before, you asked the question, Barney, to demystify whatever is around suicide.
Right.
Because you can see, I will go to a supermarket, for example, and I have my ID, and people will ask me, what do you do there at Switchboard of Miami? And I say on purpose, because it's true, I'm a suicide prevention counselor, and people sort of jump. Because that's the perception. You know, we don't talk. It's not a conversation that we will disclose. But again, how can we help people? They are contemplating, they are going through some rough times, if we don't do something, but also that we show that we can talk about this, like we started talking about gay and lesbian people 30 years ago when, you know, it was still taboo. There is some taboo associated with suicide.
That's what I meant by the stigma. You know, there's an embarrassment, a stigma, like something is, and especially because there is such a strong link with mental illness.
And this is why we also focus at Switchboard of Miami not only on prevention, intervention, but postvention. What do we do with the people? You know, Diana had formed groups, you know, to help the families to see what is it that can be done so we can all talk and we can share like we are sharing here, you know, in lay terms that everybody can, you know, learn and also that everybody can contribute. Other countries are doing great campaigns, you know, at the public level to raise the awareness. And suicide doesn't need to be something that we associate just with tragedy, like it really is, but we like to see the proactive side of the suicide situation and see how can we help to reduce the numbers.
Right.
How can we teach the children, particularly we're talking about social media? We talk with young kids, you know, 12, 13, 14, they call the suicide line because we are also part of the National Lifeline Network of Crisis Line. And we talk to young people, you know, that they don't know what to do and they don't know where to call. And thanks God they call us and they can at least ventilate what they feel. And we can do follow-ups if it's needed. The good thing about the services is that they are free. So that makes it very accessible to the community. Going back to the campaign, if we can get together, and this is what we are planning to engage the whole community, and the media, I cannot emphasize enough the important role that the media plays in all this, because you are a massive, you know, way of communication. And people, there is a level of trust, particularly in the case of WLRN, you know, the people really feel that you are doing the quality work and that what you present actually is factual and is something that can be done. And this is what we rely on, you know, involving the whole community to see the results. Maybe a 3-year campaign, 5-year, that we are working on that. Yeah.
Let's take some listener calls. If you'd like to phone in, you're certainly welcome. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Also email, if you'd like to communicate that way. That's radio@wlrn.org. First up, it's Heather in Coral Springs. Welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to call and first of all thank Switchboard for what they're doing. On July 30th, 1999, I was found in the middle of a suicide in a parking lot in Davie, Florida, by my husband, who is a pastor. And so I also just wanted to call in and commend the state of Florida for having the Baker Act, although it is very unconventional for a pastor's wife to end up being locked up for 72 hours. It ended up being the best thing for me. It saved my life. And it helped me have an epiphany, you know, because everything was, you know, the distractions were taken away. So I have actually spent the last 15 years of my life going around speaking to women's prisons, halfway houses, the police academy, high schools, what have you, just sharing that story and just sharing my learnings in why we want to choose life when the bottom falls out from underneath us.
Trudy, did you want to say anything?
Thank you very much for your call and for sharing that. We know from experience that sometimes, you know, Baker Act is the only thing that really can work. And the fact that it seems that you have turned your life totally because you are sharing and you are being proactive, probably you will never know the influence, you know, that you play, because there is a lot of people, they will never talk about that, but certainly I hope that you keep your good work, you know, because it really helps us, you know, continue ours.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Heather.
And we'll move along with Maya. She's in Miami Beach. Hi.
Hi, this is Maya. I just want to thank you and Bonnie and all of the people from Switchboard of Miami and this great show, because there's a tremendous amount of people that don't know about this great, great, wonderful database and prevention of suicide hotlines and all of the other things that Switchboard of Miami does to help the community, because they are just an amazing group of people that I've recommended them to just about everybody that I know. In every job I've had, when questions have arisen, I've always mentioned them, given them the number. But the suicide hotline, I can't say enough about it. It's probably one of the most valuable things. But Switchfoot in Miami is in general, and the fact that these people do this work and give up their time and their energy, and I'm thinking now that I'm pretty much retired of maybe volunteering myself, it's just such a worthy cause. And I can't thank you enough, you and Bonnie, Mr. Cooper, for having these people on and for producing this show, because it's just, I can't say enough about it.
Thank
Everyone
you,
that gets into any kind of a problem, whether it's suicide, of course, and or suicide of a loved one or somebody in their family, but if anyone gets into any kind of a problem in terms of... I called them when my mother was sick, and because she's passed away, but when she was sick, I called them for people to maybe come and help take care of her. I've called them for just guidance in jobs, or guidance for you know, where do I go to get this, where do I go to get that, because they have a huge database. And so thank you so much for having this show. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Maya, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Let's talk about what, you know, Maya was saying about volunteering. Are you always looking for volunteers, and what is the procedure, and what are the qualifications?
Always looking for volunteers. We welcome anybody who's interested. As we mentioned here before, you can be in the field, you can be out of the field. It's about having an open mind, willing to learn, willing to grow.
Compassionate.
Definitely compassionate.
Well, I mean, for example, you may want to help our agency, but you may not want to be on the front lines talking to somebody at risk of suicide.
You have to have a certain skill set to do that, I'm sure.
But we have many opportunities where our volunteers support us out in the community or work with us to do behind-the-scenes work. So any kind of volunteer work
is there a specific time commitment, or can people volunteer as many hours as they have available during a week?
So... through the volunteer recruiting process, we let them know we want a minimum requirement of 4 hours a week.
Okay.
1 4-hour shift a week. And it can be any time, because we're 24 hours a day.
We're going to take a little break. But before we do, let's give out the helpline numbers, please.
Sure. The local helpline number, Switchboard, is 305-358-HELP, which is 305-358-4357. Or you can call 211. You will get through us.
Okay. So it's 211 or 305-358.
Yeah, and there is always a live counselor that will answer the phones. We answer in English, in Spanish, Creole, but we have polylingual capacity.
You know?
So it makes it very easy for anybody to access our services.
Okay, one more short break. We're speaking with Switchboard of Miami members. We'll be right back.
And we're back with today's topic currents: Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, also Diana Flores, Damian Laudicio, and Trudy Kresovic. And we're talking about, of course, Switchboard of Miami, and in particular, suicide prevention, suicide intervention, and the suicide hotline. Let's take some more phone calls when we get a chance. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576, if you'd like to call in and give us a comment or question.
And email is radio@wlrn.org. Trudy, during the break, you were talking about your database, which you say is the largest in Miami-Dade County. Tell us.
Switchboard of Miami produces a database of about 5,000 programs from around 900 agencies. This is accessible to an app, to the 211.
Yes, we have an app that you can have to your phone. We also, online, if you go to our website, switchboardmiami.org,
Give me an example of how I could use this to advantage.
I mean, if I were an elderly person and I wanted the elderly abuse hotline or something, I could call Switchboard or 211 and get it from you?
Yes.
Okay.
Or if community resources, a drop-in center, home health care,
something. Like art classes or something like that?
Anything that's a community resource.
Hmm.
Financial resource, rent assistance. NA meetings, Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, support groups.
Trudy, how about funding? I'm sure there's quite a variety of sources, but break it down a little bit.
Yes, we have funding through different organizations. One of our major funders is the Children's Trust, the funds the 211 line. We have the Department of Children and Families. We have the South Florida Behavioral Network among them and other organizations.
United Way,
thank you. And the Dade County, because Bunny was mentioning about the elderly services. It's good to remind that we answer about 16 specialty lines. One of them is the Seniors Never Alone. We answer the gang prevention line. We are very active answering the veterans crisis line. So, in a sense, we respond to the needs of the community.
That's gang prevention line. If I call up and I say, I think my son's in a gang, or...
Yeah, uh-huh. And we provide information of agencies where parents can go and talk about how to deal with that. You know, gang activity is pretty big in Dade County.
What is this South Florida Veteran Stand Down?
So that is something that we participate annually, and it involves bringing not just awareness, but connecting those veterans that have served and are homeless and are in need of those services or resources. And so we connect them. We do a little bit of mingling. It's almost like a fair slash party, and it brings a lot of people in the community together.
So you mean because they may be isolated? Is you?
Well, mainly because of lack of resources. We're talking about the homeless veterans.
I see.
So for those 3 days, we hope to shelter them, connect them, give them clothes, sign them up for any type of benefits that they may be legible for. We involve the courts. The courts play a big role in that, in this event every single year. And this past year was successful along with the one before it. So we're looking forward to the upcoming one as well.
Before we get to the end of the program, Trudy, could you run down this event November 15th? It's very important.
November
16th,
Switchboard of Miami.
15th
talk,
or 16th? 16th.
16th. The Thursday before Thanksgiving. I'm sorry. You mentioned funding, John. And this is our biggest event in terms of getting funding. We call it, this is the fourth edition of the All-Stars Awards. We rely a lot on the nonprofit agencies in the county to give them as referrals. So we decided that one way to recognize their work was just getting the All Stars Award, where agencies nominate themselves or are getting nominated, and it's a way also for us to get a little bit of money also for our services. So November 16, we invite, the community to buy a seat, to buy a table, and we have organizations, and even people from the area of politics. It's a community affair, and we honor the nonprofits in the county.
And you can get the information for the affair at switchboardmiami.org?
Yeah, that's the easiest way, okay. Because you can see all the information also about all the other programs, the specialty lines, etc.
We have an emailer, Maria Luz, says she admires your effort and wishes you success, but she'd like to know if there's follow-up on your part on the lives they save, or if there's any program they refer the persons to once you've helped them. She said whatever takes a person to consider suicide has to be a big problem, which does not disappear simply by living.
So part of my role at Switchboard is to do follow-ups for the suicide calls.
Okay.
And I have volunteers who also do those follow-up calls for me. So if you've called us and we're concerned about you, we'll usually set you up for follow-up to check on you, within the next 24 hours, sometimes even just the next hour, if it's part of a way to keep you safe for right now.
Let's take another caller, Hank in North Palm Beach. Hi.
Hi, am I on now,
Yes.
Hank? Okay. I just want to applaud you for the program and the service you're providing with the suicide hotline. About 30 years ago, I had a friend I was talking to on the phone. He said he was going to commit suicide, and he wasn't any derelict. He was a pretty bright guy. He was the editor of the editorial page of the Winston-Salem Journal. Vietnam veteran, and he could not put the war in back of him, a sense of betrayal and the whole thing that went along with the Vietnam War. Became an alcoholic, family broke up, continued to drink, DUIs, virtually a captive in his apartment in downtown Winston-Salem, and then the rug was pulled out from under him when he was fired. And I talked to him about 4 hours before he committed suicide. I didn't know what to say to the guy. There wasn't a Baker Act or anything like that in North Carolina. There were no suicide hotline, nothing. So I just talked to him. I should have, I guess, called the police or something. But anyway, sure enough, 4 hours later, he put a gun to his head and committed suicide. And a day doesn't go by, or I should say a week doesn't go by, that I don't think about it. Absolutely, just it devastated a lot of people. And so anyway, I just wanted to pass that along. And you don't know how many people are out there hurting.
Yeah, the effects of others can be really devastating on others.
On others. Yeah, thank you so much for calling.
And we'll go along to line three. We're very short on time, but Patty, hi.
Hi.
Miami, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I lost a friend of mine about a week ago. She no warning sign, I found out through my sister, who found out through my cousin. It was just posted on Facebook that a friend of ours from our childhood just overdosed on the prescription medication. She had lost her father, and she lost her mother, and I guess it was too much for her to bear. Mm-hmm. She had also lost her job, but there were no warning signs. She never said, "I'm going to kill myself." She never said, "I'm fed up with life and I'm done." No warning signs at all. You would think, you know, she would do this. She also had a daughter. So there was nothing there that, you know, you would think, you know, she's going to kill herself.
Right. Diana?
So it was a shock. I think I'm still in shock. Yeah. That she's gone.
Yeah, we all know the feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've had other people that I know that have committed suicide, but mostly because of drugs. So, you know, that you would expect, you know what, they're going to end up on the wrong side, you know.
Definitely. And first off, I want to thank you for sharing. I know that this is difficult for you, and it sounds like you're still even processing all the emotions, every, you know, the event. But thank you for sharing.
Well, that will do it. We're sorry, Patty, for your loss. We've been speaking with people from, or members of the team from the nonprofit Switchboard of Miami. Diana Flores is the manager of the Suicide Prevention Department and master trainer at Switchboard of Miami. Damian Laudicio is the coordinator in the Switchboard Suicide Prevention Department, and Trudy Krasovic has been with them for 27 years. Damien's been there since 1993, too. Trudy, 27 years, substance abuse specialist, crisis counselor, member of Switchboard Suicide Prevention Department, and a founding member of the South Florida Suicide Prevention Coalition. And again, the numbers are
305-358-4357 or 211.
And the website, switchboardmiami.org, for their event on November 16th.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Our pleasure.
And for your work.
Thank you for having us.
And that wraps up today's program. Thanks for tuning in. Remember, if you'd like to hear this program again or want someone else to hear it, you can go to our website, that's WLRN.org, and find free audio archives and downloads. It may help someone to hear this program. And we have more information and links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Join us tomorrow for the lowdown on online education, Broward College Online Style. Its virtual campus offers some of the most affordable degrees in South Florida, and entry into high-wage and growing fields of employment. Also, it's closely linked to the regional workforce. We'll have a panel on hand to take your questions. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.